phone to record.
Double recording, smart.
Last project I did, I actually lost one of the recordings, so saved my bum.
Do you know what? I have been interviewed probably, well, I'm going to say 200 times in my life, and minimum, and several times people's professionals have gone, I wasn't recording.
Oh, that's I'm just going to double check I'm recording, and I am.
Okay, shoot.
So first of all, could you tell me a little bit about yourself and your career and how you got started in theater and dance? And
I'll try and give you the concise version. I was a classically trained ballet dancer from a very young age, ridiculously young, 3, all the way through until I was 19 years old. And completed the RAD and the IST syllabus in classical dance training, as most dancers at that time did in Canada. And was absolutely passionate about it, and then moved on, danced semi-professionally and then professionally in Canada for a few years. I have to cut that off later. And at the age of, I'm going to say 22, I sustained enough injuries, both emotionally, psychologically, and physically, that I decided to leave that career behind and strike out as a poet, and which I did in Montreal. I was in Montreal at the time. This would be 1976. And, of course, that meant I was a waiter. And but I began my own autodidactism journey, training myself and educating myself, because I was a high school dropout, which I had done in order to dance. And somewhere along the line, somebody convinced me to teach them. And in teaching them dance, I realized that I really loved this idea of giving movement that I had designed. And suddenly, I'd always made movement and been very, very much an improvisational dancer. But suddenly I realized, oh, I really like dancing again. The emotional distress of the world of dance, and the at the time very undeveloped ideas of size, body image, and so forth. You know, I was very tall, but made to be extremely thin. And I wasn't that thin. I'm this thin. And to be the size I was as a ballet dancer was undoable, and I was just too damn hungry. And so I had left it behind kind of angrily and with great, you know, pain, really hurt, like a bad relationship. And but then I suddenly realized, oh, I actually really dig making my own work and performing my own stuff. Oh, okay. And so came back to the performance world in my very early 20s as my as an independent choreographer and performer. At the same time, parallel, One Yellow Rabbit was pitching its tent, and they were my best friends. And very quickly, I was kind of drafted in as the movement person. They were very interested in physical theater and Grotowski and so forth. And so I kind of was following them around and helping them out, and then finally agreed to perform and choreograph a show, during which they then trying to figure out a song, I was like, you guys, and sang it for them. And that was it. And I suddenly, my voice was in the realm of my performing abilities as well, and so launched my career as an actor. And so the parallel life as the independent dancer choreographer continued alongside the theater development and the acting and writing and directing world, until probably I was 30, at the same time I was teaching at the University of Calgary. And loved it, absolutely had a passionate life as a teacher, and had developed a really huge interest in a system of pedagogy that was really meaningful to me and really forwarding my own ideas of movement and movement for non-actors and movement for dancers and non-dancers and all these kinds of things at the same time. But I realized at around the age of 30 that if I didn't get out of the University of Calgary, I would remain there. Because it was, I didn't have a degree or anything, but I'd been drafted in as a sessional teacher. I was teaching in the fine arts department and the phys ed department, which was called then, and not the kinesiology department yet. And, you know, kind of realized, I think I'm going to just devote myself to One Yellow Rabbit. Mm-hmm. Because I just really liked what we were doing. I really loved the work. And I don't really remember, I do remember sort of leaving the dance world. It just felt too limited and kind of square for me, mm-hmm. which was interesting because at the time the dance world was the hippest place to be, but there was a lot of regionalism and, you know, Western Canadian dance artists were considered, like, not good enough, mm-hmm. and that enraged me. And so I think it was easy for me to leave that behind and push my shoulder against the One Yellow Rabbit wheel and mm-hmm. have been there, you know, devotedly. And working as a independent when I'm choreographing big shows, big musicals, less and less of mm-hmm. that because I put more and more of my energy towards the rabbits now mm-hmm. and my own teaching systems and so forth. But for many years, continued to choreograph and work with bigger companies, the Citadel, Theatre Calgary, opera companies, mm-hmm. Choreographing and staging, big nice. Work.
So, because I noticed that there is a difference between choreographing and staging, could you just maybe go into that a little bit and explain yeah. how that differs?
Well, choreography is the actual movement-to-movement step-making. Okay. And staging is the overall picture and patterning and design. So it's the movement design of the piece, the concept, the style, mm-hmm. and within that, this is my definition, yeah. is the choreography. So a lot of the work I do now and have done for years, and especially with the rabbits, has been to set the performer actors to task mm-hmm. with doing very specific vocabulary work that I oversee the design of, but that they create, and then I arrange that movement.
Okay, so that's how it kind of becomes an ensemble?
Yeah, collective. Well, it allows the actors full ownership. Mm-hmm. Quite often I also do set small vocabularies for them to learn. And so we're mixing and matching my choreography mm-hmm. and theirs in my staging design.
Mm-hmm. Could you clarify what you mean by vocabulary? Is that just here's a dance step or?
Yeah, sometimes it's like 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, counts of phrases mm-hmm. of movement that I have set.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's, and more it's based on the text we're using and exactly how I would like them to design the movement and then how I will distill what they've designed. And it can be very arbitrary, but my research and discovery and eyes have told me over the years that if I ask you to take a text you're interested in playing and break it down and find some very key inspirational segments or words from that, and I set you to the task to arbitrarily pick a movement and link them together really fast, mm-hmm. I can make you look, I don't know how trained you are as a dancer, but I can make you look amazing really, really fast, mm-hmm. and you'll know what you're doing because you made it up. Mm-hmm. And once you've really memorized what you made up and repeated it 50 times, which is easy to do because you know it, mm-hmm. you will inform it. And I can then begin to say, now you can add it to that. You can do it walking. Mm-hmm. Now you can do it sitting. Everybody learn Sandra's. Mm-hmm. Everybody, Sandra, you learn, you know, we're just going to use the first quarter of what you did. And I just want everyone to do that. And now, Sandra, keep going on your own. And now everybody pick up their own. You have an enormous set of building blocks mm-hmm. to build your design out of.
Yeah, that sounds like a really neat way to do it.
It's very effective, mm-hmm. very efficient, and especially you're looking at the hive mind, the collective spirit in the room, creating beautiful movement, because all movement is beautiful, mm-hmm. and in particular using repetition and distilling that movement, you can make it even more potent and powerful mm-hmm. because you can isolate it. And if I can get you to understand, I don't want you to beat your hands in the air and your head in the air with your rhythms as you're trying to deliver a text, but that I want you to sit very still and deliver the text and at some point begin your vocabulary, I can guarantee you that it'll be much more of a powerful engagement visually for the audience as they listen to you.
Yeah.
And then we can make the choice that now you're just talking with your hands and being normal, and but then suddenly it just bleeds out. So we have a lot more choice to play.
Mm-hmm. How do you find when you're doing this kind of choreography or staging work and you're not also directing the piece, how does that relationship play into it?
Well, I've worked really closely with some... It's really important that I work with people who know me and appreciate the system I'm giving them.
Mm-hmm.
So I've worked for years and hundreds of years with Blake Brooker at One Yellow Rabbit. And he calls himself a movement dramaturg. And sometimes I believe I'm also supplying that partially that job. But our agreement is that I will lay out the physicality of a piece. And he will yay or nay it.
Mm-hmm.
So you give your director, you have to, you know, understand that the director's vision, if you're in the piece, is the one you must defer to. Mm-hmm. So if you've agreed that the agreement you all have is that at some point he or she may say, I don't think we can use that,
mm-hmm.
or I think that that's too much, or I just want to use that beginning image, or... And as long as you're not, like, married to it and have decided you're a genius, which has happened, you can just go, okay. So the director has the final say.
Yeah. Nice. How does, because you said you work with Blake Brooker for a long time, how does that kind of lasting relationship influence your work? Like, do you find it carrying over to other things you do, or?
Ugh, yes. I was married to him.
Oh, okay.
I'm no longer, I'm now married to Chris Cran.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not even begin to tell you where it starts and ends. I could, but it would take many more hours than we have. And it's a very symbiotic relationship, and it involves not just him, but all the rabbits who I've worked with for 30 years. Michael Green, Andy Curtis, Richard McDowell, the composer and videographer and tech genius of our company, is someone I've known since I'm 15, and our relationship is also incredibly connected.
Mm-hmm.
So we're all just so involved with one another's aesthetically that you wonder sometimes whose idea is whose. And it's easy for me to sometimes take credit for an idea or give credit because I can remember very specifically devising that idea or using that as my cri de cœur in a rehearsal process. But... a lot depends on the agreement between the ensemble to not constantly claim credit and need.
Yeah. Cool. Because Yellow Rabbit has been around since, I believe, 1983. Is that correct?
Do you think that's something in here? It sounds like a woodpecker.
I think it might be a woodpecker outside.
Cool. Oh, look, it's a... Oh, that is so fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Can you see it up on the top of the... Just look at the very top outside. On this side, come over here. See at the top?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so tiny.
I know. They're beautiful.
That's so cool.
We've been around since around 83, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How have you seen the geography of theater changing? Like, has there been a lot of changes you're trying to incorporate into the company, or how have you managed to be around for so long? Because it seems like a really long time for theater companies.
It's enormously long. It's especially the same people. Many theater companies are around for a lot longer than 30 years. Not normally with the same team.
Mm-hmm.
We are and have always defined ourselves more as a rock band than a theater company. In our own minds, and that might give you insight into why we're still around. Everybody does their solo album. We need a bass player. We need a drummer. We need a songwriter. We need the songwriter team. If we're the Rolling Stones, it wasn't just Mick and it wasn't just Jagger. It wasn't just Lennon or McCartney. It was the magic of them both. It's mysterious. It involves friendship, tension, the right kind of irritations that get you to the Pearl Place. Mm-hmm. It is mysterious, though. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with, we've really had a lot of fun together. We're very playful, and we've had a lot of fun together. Have we incorporated a lot of other, of new ideas? You know, at the risk of sounding like a complete egomaniac, not really. We're very interested in our ideas mm-hmm. and the implementation of what we are into. None of us are theater school trained. I think Michael and Andy dipped their toes in and jumped back out as young guys in their university years. We're interested in really good theater, and but we don't often look outside of ourselves to go, oh, we really dig what's going on with La Page. Let's do some of that. Not really, never. Much more really down with what our ideas and our passions and interests. And so I guess what we're influenced now by, you know, all our young friends that we try to bring into the company and work with, the lab, is a huge development for us because it was a place where we could be surrounded by artists who were fascinated by the similar theater-making systems and wanted to come and see what ours were. And that has spawned an enormous network of like-minded artists across the country. And they influence us with friendship and spirit and curiosity. But I wouldn't say that we're really as interested, really, in, you know, we've just witnessed the explosion of small independent collection, creation theater types.
It's really interesting.
Because there really were very, very, very few.
Yeah.
We had lots and lots of friends who were doing the same things, more in Toronto, when we were kids, but we didn't, you know, we didn't see the final results of a body of work. And, you know, that was another thing I credit Blake Brooker with. He was absolutely visionary in his decisions as a very young guy that we needed to devote ourselves to creation of a body of work. Mm-hmm. Not a hit, not a great show, but a body of work. So we are very proud of that, and it sustained us.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that the summer lab that you run sort of helps keep that fresh, that body of work updated? And
well, it allows us to refer to it and use it as a teaching tool, and and it's allowed us to actually you know, when you've done something with a lot of intuitive presence and non-cerebral, non-intellectual. I mean, we're deeply intellectual as a bunch of, you know, we're sort of geeky that way, but we're not in the rehearsal room and in the creation room. We're much more active and we like to work fast and put a lot of things, a lot of ideas on the table fast and then begin discerning. It's allowed us to create the working vocabulary and really, really name it, define it for ourselves so that we can use it as an organizing principle for whoever we're working with. And that has been, that's been a really valuable part of what we've become, because we hear ourselves often saying, like we say in the lab, or, you know, just like what we tell everyone in the lab, and we're hearing ourselves define it. You've made work, and then someone goes, how'd you do that? And you go, I don't know. Like, wow, I guess, okay, well, if I really think about it for 17 years, I can probably come up with that.
Could you explain the process of the summer lab a little more, and just how that starts and what goes on during it and what the end product is?
It has been a gathering of like-minded artists every summer for 3 weeks. We work Monday to Friday. We work 10 till 6 as a group. The morning sessions are, I'm in charge of, the body. And we, I I take apart the systems that I've developed, but also I pay homage to yoga, and I break down for the artist within the practice that we begin to engage in together why I've used yoga as the company's physical, as opposed to a dance system, and how it has influenced and helped me in my theater practice. And then I take that work and really encourage the artist to devise their own practice. And then I... And then I finish that session with them, and which is also very helpful to giving them a very important beginning to the day. And we really believe in, you know, our triad is precision, economy, and relaxation. So we've begun with some very precise and economical explorations that result in them feeling more relaxed and at one as we begin. Then we do a lot of very specific physical work, task-making, vocabulary building, examination, postural analysis, spatial work, distillation notions. And then the day transfers. There's lunch, and Blake takes over for a few hours, and he does his systems, a small lecture series, and his systems of devising text. So he's in charge of the word, the text, from making text out of the world and in the world, and moves the gang towards group creation, which they begin in the second week in his sessions, and which is presented, each group, small groups, we divide the gang into two groups or three, depending on how many people are there. And they present their group pieces as a staged reading in week three. And then Chris Cran takes over the last part of the day and is the observer and the observed. One of the most important relationships for me in my life is with Chris, who's a visual artist, who our conversation had been for many, many, many years before the lab was invented. He would always tell me what he could see on a stage. And it was a very informative thing to me as a performer. And I always was fascinated by what he could see and how he could name it and why he saw what he saw and how he liked to watch shows over and over and over and over and over. I was fascinated by that. He brings some of that to the artists and his own body of work to freshen their palette and give them something else to think about in terms of the visual. And then we devote a portion of the day to discussing punctums and studiums, what has pierced them in the day, what the general information package is, and within that, what has leapt out for you, you individually. And then they spend the evenings and the weekends creating their own 10-minute piece and or working with each other on 10-minute pieces to be presented at the end.
Okay. Is this meant for people who have specific dancing training, or do you just take
anyone? No, it's not dance. It's anyone. Okay. It's not dance. It's theater.
Yeah. Okay. Because it sounded like there's a lot of movement involved.
There is. And... But, you know, human beings on a stage are in a body. And what kills a lot of good theater is that they forget that, or nobody took into account that they're standing yakking at you for a long time with no understanding of the body that was attached to the to the talking head. So we're doing total theater, baby.
Okay.
We're saying you didn't. It's not this. It might be, but you better be very clearly making that choice. Oh no, there's a great deal of performance conversation in the observer in the third portion of the day. They are observing, recording their observation, manipulating that recording, their what they've recorded, and feeding it back on the stage. So you're constantly in the light, you're constantly delivering text, you're constantly thinking about your own body in space. That's what matters when people come to a theater. It really doesn't matter what the play is or what the set is or what the design is. If they came and you blow it, they don't really care how good the play was. If they come and you really don't blow it and are able to deliver it with with equanimity and power and the right kind of emotional temperature, they go, it was fantastic. Right? Yeah. And it was a good play. Yeah, it was a pretty good show. I think the play was okay, but it was a really amazing experience. I was glad I was there, as mm-hmm. opposed to kind of sucked.
Yeah.
A great performer can elevate any material. So, of course, we really like good plays, mm-hmm. and we really like good performance templates.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very, very attentive to that. But we are a performance theater.
Mm-hmm. I noticed on the website that there
So it's open to dancers, actors, writers, songwriters, architects, anybody with advanced study in their field.
Okay.
So you no beginners.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If somebody says to me, oh, I'd love to do all that. I'll work my ass off. And I'm an advanced practitioner in something. Mm-hmm. I know what it's like to work really hard and be really good at something.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of just putting everyone together and seeing what you get.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
What you were saying, I noticed on the website that you guys put a really big emphasis on music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if that's just for the dance pieces that you guys do, or if that's just in general for
We don't really do dance pieces. Everything's mixed up.
Yeah.
So there's most of our theater involves a very strong physical component.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, even more so. Highly choreographed. Less and less, but still enormous attention paid to whatever's going on. Fingertips, how the hands touch the surface of the table, all of that. We don't do dance work.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm getting mixed up with the choreographed aspect and the dance aspect, because for me those
are your brain says dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it's just a word, but it's not a dance company.
Mm-hmm.
It's a theater company.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a total theatrical devotion,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a dance heavy or musical. We don't do musical theater, although mm-hmm. we have a dozen musicals in our repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
We're very, very, very passionate about cabaret work. We always are singing, and none of us are trained.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't worry about that because we're only worried about how the song was delivered.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we care if it's really flat and pitchy and awful and people are going, oh God, but we don't have that problem.
Yeah.
People normally go, you know, maybe a trained opera singer or a legit, you know, mind is going to say, well, but most people are hip enough to understand this is what it is. More like a pop
mm-hmm.
or rock sensibility where you don't go, I don't know if I like that. That voice didn't hit its notes. That's not mm-hmm. That's not what you're doing. You're delivering music.
Do you find that a lot of people who come and see the shows understand that aspect, like understand what you're doing, or are they very receptive to it?
Yes. We're really good at what we do. Sorry, that's really it sounds egocentric, but it's not.
Mm.
We're very good at what we do. So once people come in, though when we were younger, people were like, I didn't get it. And it would be like, you didn't get what? And I used to engage them. We've always tended to come out and speak to the audience and hang out with people. And one of my favorite games was, what didn't you get? Well, I don't know. It's kind of poetry and then like dancing and stuff. It's like, yeah. And what didn't you get? Well, I don't know. Like, I thought it was going to be a play. So you don't like poetry? No, I don't mind poetry. Did you know what it was about? Yeah, I mean, it was about this and that and this. Uh-huh. And the movement, did it make sense to you that, you know, yeah, well, I knew that, you know, she was dancing with her husband.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what didn't you get? And it used to be quite often that people would be like, well, I mean, I got it. But it was just new to them.
Yeah, it was different.
And you still have a little bit of that. But now that we're older, we're not, our delivery system is mature and has a great deal of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts a lot of audience members at ease immediately
mm-hmm.
because they're not looking at a young person really trying hard and being weird.
Yeah.
But we sure had our share of those days. And maybe we educated our audience for the most part. I'm sure there's still lots of people who come and go, you know, I like going to a nice play.
Where's the Shakespeare?
Yeah, but a lot of people now are way educated.
Mm-hmm. They're a little bit more receptive
to. Oh yeah, and they don't want to, if they know, I mean, they're going to Shakespeare, I'm going to see a Noel Coward. I'm going to see a Christmas Carol or something that is very familiar to me, mm-hmm. and predictable. We don't do predictable. And I think a lot of people appreciate that and feel like they're in on it.
Mm-hmm. So what influences you guys to do the work that you want to do? I know you said that Blake Brooker takes things from everyday and creates out of that. Is that just a general thing for everyone?
Or? We bring, each artist is responsible. Whenever you want, you can bring something. It has tended to be myself, Michael mm-hmm. Green, and Blake, mm-hmm. who have brought, that's who brings the project to the table mm-hmm. and says, I'll give you an example. Right now, I'm working with Peter Hinton, who used to run the National Arts Center. He's now directing it. He's more known as a director, mm-hmm. but he and I are old friends, and he wants to perform. He and I are going to do, wanted to do, say, poetry together in a choreographed mm-hmm. performance. And I presented that to the company. They all go, oh, we want to do that too. There's touring possibilities in Europe for this project, commemorating World War I. Everybody leaps on, and so now we're doing a project called Trench, a ballet mm-hmm. macabre. Michael Green brings his Making Treaty 7, a project he's been working with First Nations, to reenact and delve into what has happened, what is the aftermath of the signing of Treaty 7. Mm-hmm. And so we will be interacting very closely with First Nations, which is very meaningful to all of us and very exciting mm-hmm. and giving us an opportunity to suddenly really understand where we come from and what was here before we arrived and how we can now interact together.
Mm-hmm. So what do you look forward to doing the most? That was a weird way to phrase that. Where do you find the most meaning in the work that you do?
Well, once we decide we're doing it, that's a done deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, once we go, okay, we're going to investigate the trench poets, mm-hmm. those who took the time and or were so moved during the war, Great War, to write about it and write about it poetically. Mm-hmm. And to record what happened to them, well, we're in. Once it's agreed, we're in. Mm-hmm. If we're going to do a piece about alien abduction, once we make the decision, you know, well, let's do it. Okay, we're in. Mm-hmm. We take great inspiration and meaning out of a simple idea. We don't judge. We don't begin a process and with each idea go, I don't like that. I don't like that. I don't want to do that. Everything goes on the table and then up on the wall. Mm-hmm. And then later on, it's like, you know, I'm just still not responding to that. No, me neither. Why aren't we responding to that? Maybe we don't want it. Or, oh my God, I know why, because it's a really important sticking point.
Mm-hmm. So do you find that you bring a lot of things that you've done before into your current works?
What do you mean?
I'm just, in my mind, I'm imagining little cards that have ideas on them on a corkboard, and then developing a grander idea out of all those little ideas, and maybe with one as a focus. But I'm sure, or I assume, there must be some ideas that get left behind or forgotten. Yeah. Do you ever incorporate those into the new works you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, maybe not really specifically. We don't have a card catalog. Mm-hmm. We should.
Yeah.
We should. That'd be a really good idea. Because mm-hmm. we do put cards up on the wall.
Yeah.
And we do put notes up. And to tell you the truth, it's like, where are all the notes? I've got, for instance, a sheaf of cards when we worked with Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall. Mm-hmm. And he's a very close friend, and I loved our cards from that session, and I kept them just almost out of affection. Mm-hmm. Moreover, the tone and the energy and the overall lesson from something resonates, and mm-hmm. we get back to it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things?
But our rules, you know, our sort of rules of engagement, always shifting, always changing, but they're very important to us. Mm-hmm. You know, it can sometimes can be like, you know what? You're judging me. And it'll be like, sorry, yeah, I am. It's like, well, don't, because it's bugging me right now, and I don't mm-hmm. feel I can rock. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm feeling So we have the language to go, you know, and we, because we have tension. Mm-hmm. We're human beings, and there's times where it's really tricky. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard sometimes to be the only woman. And they would all look at me right now if they were here and go, what? But there's many, many an occasion where it just, it strikes me. I can give you an example. Blake's relationship with me is such that around a table, his relationship to Andy would always be, if Andy feeds in with something, oh, Andy, that's a fantastic idea. He uses that kind of language to encourage Andy mm-hmm. and to make Andy feel that his ideas are so welcome, because Andy tends to be much more of a listener.
Yeah.
If I am forwarding an idea, he'll go, yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he'll literally say, yeah, no, and use that kind of thing where his hand will do yeah. that. And I'll have to say, please let me finish. Mm-hmm. And there would be always a little tension that it's like, don't take up too much air and time, D. Mm-hmm. So it for me, it's strange, because it's like, is this a gender thing? Is this a relationship thing? But he and I have learned over these years to talk about that, mm-hmm. to go, you know, say, no, I wasn't at all. It was this. I go, oh, okay, felt like you were. So we have to be very, very respectful with each other mm-hmm. and constantly, you know, understand. But the energy of, you know, the woman's point of view, sometimes, I know he would be horrified if he heard me say this, but sometimes it's almost like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I sometimes am exhausted by, having to really demand my time and place yeah. for. Right? And, you know, occasionally you just want to go like, oh, fuck off, man.
Yeah,
but we have a great joking life together, and I can say that.
How long does it take one of these shows to develop? Because it sounds like there's a lot of things that go into, and a lot of thought that goes into it, and a lot of shaping.
Depends. Remarkably quickly. Mm-hmm. Again, I think we have systems and trust and shorthand that allow us to. One of our last shows, called People You May Know, we incorporated photo booth. We built, you know, digital puppets out of photo booth characters that we mm-hmm. all found. We projected photo booth with enormous projections above our head. Mm-hmm. So that if you're watching me on stage, you can watch me. I'm looking in my computer, and I'm playing one of those photo booth people, and that's who you're seeing above my head. Mm-hmm. And that show came together and it's a very complicated show, mm-hmm. but it came together in a month. After a workshop, mm-hmm. I'm going to say, on average, 4 or 5 weeks.
Okay.
But sometimes we work on something for 3 years. Gilgamesh, we took a couple of workshops on that one, and then the development process. So mm-hmm. all told, 2 months, 2.5, 3 months, with a lot of time between.
Yeah. Do you, when you present a workshop, it's obviously different than when you actually put on the show, but are you still trying to make adjustments to the show, even if it's in performances, or do you guys just try and, like, for the sake of everyone, just stop it and
yeah. No, we're, you know, that's the show. Let's do the show.
Yeah,
we're not big on. It's interesting because we feel extremely free on stage, but we feel free within the show. Mm-hmm. We're not big on, oh, it doesn't matter. Take it in that direction tonight, mm-hmm. Because we calibrate them quite carefully. Mm-hmm. That being said, I know that we all feel very deeply empowered to deliver our own performances every time. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting relationship. I never feel like, oh, God. I always feel very, very lively and very in control of what I'm doing. And it's the art of subtlety. Mm-hmm. You know, we're very respectful of each other. And we value tremendously the magic. We don't do a lot of yakking about each other's performances in rehearsal. Mm-hmm. I don't say, so Sandra, when you do that, it's really hard for me because I'm feeling la, 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 la. And you're like, well, we don't do that. If you're giving me that, that's what I'll work with. Mm-hmm. And if I've made a choice and I'm doing this, it's like nobody ever gets to say, is she going to do it like that? That's the way I'm working. And unless there's a really wrong, like, you know what, it actually will really, then it's a director's triangulation. But once we've decided the tone, the actors are in charge of building their own work. Mm-hmm. Big part of probably why we like it so much there, mm-hmm. because Blake is not that kind of director, and neither am I, to be too specific with what's your motivation and, you know, your overall intention with this line. You know, you might be sometimes that you can help each other, like, I don't know what I'm saying here. What is this? Mm-hmm. Somebody might go, well, it's like, oh, yeah, got it, okay. But for the most part, we're just, that's the actor's job, not the director's.
Yeah. Do you guys do co-ops with other companies, or do you tend to stay? How does that dynamic change when you introduce new blood who hasn't been as, or who isn't as comfortable as you guys are?
For the most part, people love it. People love playing with us. Mm-hmm. There's been some times where it was just overwhelmingly, you know, I remember years ago a piece whereby we had a Scottish actor working with us. The other two Scots loved being there and had a ball. Mm-hmm. But one woman took things very personally all the time, and she was deeply offended on a couple of occasions by a more improvisational moment that happened. It was a comedy. Mm-hmm. And the actor got really excited about the riff he was on. And it kept growing. It was one of those where it was like, okay, that little one laugh riff is now 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
To me, it was more just like, oh, brother. Mm-hmm. To her, it was like an absolute travesty of the theater. Mm. And, you know, she was infuriated. But I'd have to tell you, that's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. We did John Morrell's play Taking Shakespeare a few years ago. Now, John Morrell's a playwright. One of the most esteemed playwrights of the, you know, well-written play in Canadian theater history. Mm-hmm. Very close friend of the company. And he had brought a play to us to say, would you guys like to premiere it? And I was to play the prof, and we would find a young man to play the young man. Mm-hmm. But I could only hear John's voice, and so I put it to him that he play the prof and I play the young man. Mm-hmm. And because I have a history of playing young men, and I really like doing it. And he went for it, and we had an extraordinary experience. And mm-hmm. I guess if you were to talk to him, he would have a lot to tell you about how free he feels and how relieved he is in our room. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys tend to, well, I guess you personally, do you tend to work with bigger casts or smaller casts?
Smaller now.
What's the difference? Do you find that there's a lot of a difference between the sizes? Or is it just getting people to understand the same vocabulary?
It's just working with, you know, the best way you can. Mm-hmm. It's hard making theater. Yeah. And, you know, it's got to be a fairly good vibe in the room. It's got to be without forcing people to feel like they're supposed to be laughing all the time or feeling, you know, where sometimes I think that might be where we would be a little bit intimidating is when we riff, when we get really going on internal riffs. And I do notice, like, we just were working with one of our younger artists this last 2 weeks, and I thought, you know, he must at times just get so bored with our endless riffing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, yeah, I'm not in on this riff. And I can't even try, because they just sort of look at me like, you're not invited in. And when he told us that, I did laugh, because it was like, oh, honey, that's true, though. I know what you mean. I totally know what you mean. Mm-hmm. But then also, that's kind of paying your dues. When I was a young person, I didn't try and get in on the riff.
Yeah, it's kind of, you've been there that long.
Yeah, one day it's just funny, and someone starts, you know.
Mm. Neat. It sounds like you guys have a really good thing going. It sounds like you guys have a lot of fun.
We do. Yeah. And we struggle, and we have monumental, epic things that we go through, including divorces and breakups and you know, family stuff and enormous challenges, you know. Periods of time where you don't feel like you're on the same page and people seem to be pulling in different directions. But we've just finished a 2-week session, and here we are all again going, unbelievable. you know?
Yeah.
This is so much fun. We had so much fun together, and we were so excited by our future and felt so encouraged and inspired, and it's like, wow, well, here we go. Next 30 years.
Where do you see yourself going in the next 30 years?
Well, to the end. Dance me to the end of love, says Leonard Cohen. You know, in 30 years, I'm going to be 86. And I fully intend to still be working.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't feel like work. It feels like engagement and
mm-hmm.
Life. It feels like life to me. And I think probably I would like to imagine we will go more and more into the world of subtlety.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I value enormously in watching others and in watching theater. I value enormously someone who can deliver subtle performance and yet that will reach me.
Mm-hmm.
I have an allergy to, you know, to schmacting, and
mm-hmm.
when I can see people acting their hearts out, it causes me tremendous embarrassment, and I'm forever trying to move the work I'm doing away from that, even though we're very bold performers. But I'm most happy when I see someone inhabit and not act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's a very important distinction for us. We're very, very committed to the emotional reality of whatever artificial world we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can be as crazy and emotionally, as comedic and as ridiculous as something can be, would not excuse us from being incredibly committed to the emotional reality of that
mm-hmm.
character, including its tragic side, his or her tragic side.
Yeah. How do you preserve the work that you've done in the past, or do you just let it go? I know there's not a lot of ways, like, because theater is intimate and there, and obviously a large part of it is how the movement is and how everyone moves and how the whole picture works. Do you wish there was a better way to preserve it,
yeah.
or...
I'll tell you one thing I see us doing in the next 30 years, and probably a lot of it to do with me, is finding some brilliant grad student and committing to a really thorough development of a really exquisite library of our work.
Mm-hmm.
With video component, with, you know, an online presence, with... you know, I'd like to teach an online university course on One Yellow Rabbit, which would include amassing all the video components we can find that we haven't lost,
mm-hmm.
putting all our scripts back in, you know, in one spot, finding all the photographs we can, amassing all everything we can. And, you know, we've been sometimes really good at it and most of the time lame. Lame.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one of those details that, you know, it's like, oh, shit, did we hire a videographer? Oh, are we videoing the show? Oh, God. Oh, you know, now we're like, oh, God, phone Joe Kelly, who's a brilliant videographer in town. Oh, thank God we remembered. But for years it would be like, you know what? Never got a video of that show.
Well,
or a good one.
Yeah.
We got like some weird camera where you're in and out of the frame most of the time, and it's like, that's helpful. Dumb. Stuff that breaks your heart. You're like, oh, God, I can't believe how lame that is.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe that's part of all the magic.
Mm-hmm.
It's like traveling. I've abandoned my camera and my... I've just abandoned it all because, you know, all of this constant looking at the world, it just makes me fucking crazy. And I saw people, I've actually seen people in the theater, watching the theater through their phone, and I'm like, you're in the theater! I mean, I'll say to someone, you know, I'm rude that way, because it's like, you know, because I can't stand the little light interrupting my experience.
It drives me crazy. especially in theater, like movie theaters, when they're really far away, it still drives me crazy, but you can't get to them. But like in the theater, you're watching people. Like it's.
Huxley Workman just did a show through the ATP Festival at our theater. And I guess because he's a rock, musician, maybe there was a permission for some people, younger people. Mm-hmm. But, there was like several people who the show started, and within like 2 minutes they were like doing this with people behind them.
That's crazy.
And, it was like, at one point I was like, and, she was literally like, I could tell she was like, what?
What am I doing wrong? What's happening?
And I did it again. She was like, somebody else beside her went like, put your phone down. She was like, oh, why? And you could see it was like, why?
Yeah.
Why should I put my, why can't I? So anyway, I'm a little bit in, part of me goes, it's awfully nice to think about things and remember them. And mm-hmm. I think for the most part, we'd be able to find the scripts of everything.
Yeah. Somebody has a copy hidden somewhere with some
and,
statement.
I think we've all saved our own and whatever we've all written and I think there are Bibles of the show. Bibles are still in the theater, scattered around. So mm-hmm. feel confident that, if you actually did go, all right, that's it. I'm taking 3 years and I'm going to start, which I said I was going to do this spring, but I'm not going to now. I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
You need time to start it and you need some help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think that the theater is changing in a way that makes people think it's okay to have their phones out? Do you think it's going to soon embrace that? Or?
Yeah, I hope not, but I think so.
Mm.
I think theater's got to change. It's tough to talk people into coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we do not have a big house, and we have faithful people, and they love it. We get standing ovations. And even then, word of mouth doesn't even always work.
Yeah.
So many people say, oh, I heard your show was fantastic. Oh, I heard it was just amazing.
Did you come see it?
It's like, wow. it was on for the whole month.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, oh, I really wanted to come to that. I'll say, yeah, wow. I mean, you don't want to go like, well, why didn't you?
Yeah.
But it is a big question. It's, I really am like, wow, people... Oh, and I have a reputation now, and I'm kind of a senior artist, and I'm quite well known, and mm-hmm. that kind of way.
Yeah.
And so people really do talk to me a lot about like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they only knew how it just makes me crazy. Oh my God, I heard your show was stunning. People are raving to me about it. I really wanted to come. And it's like, yeah.
It was a one-night show. But
yeah, it's like, wow, so you just didn't though, you just didn't, people just don't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are engaging against a very difficult battle, and that is a, an absolute onslaught of stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are, what they really want to do is hang out with their friends and laugh,
mm-hmm.
and drink and party,
yeah.
more than they want to organize themselves to get to a place.
Mm-hmm.
And observe quietly. And yet when they do come, I think they're like, oh man, that was I really liked that. Yeah. People do, they'll say to me all the time, oh, so good to just come and hang out at the theater,
Do you think it's that way just in Calgary or is...
No, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere?
Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. And I can guarantee you that. Sorry for checking my
time.
Oh
no, I've been keeping track too.
No, it's... Every single place in the world is the conversation with every theater company everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Cirque du Soleil, even, will be going, now why are our numbers falling off a bit?
Mm-hmm.
Because they want their 150% houses.
Yeah. Well, they've got Amaloon in town right now, and I saw an ad on Facebook, buy tickets. It's like, oh, they're not sold out? I thought they would be all, mm-hmm. sold out and gone.
Right. Now it's like, oh, yeah, Cirque du Soleil, right. Where it used to be like, oh, my God.
Gotta go see that.
You always were going to. It's a huge, huge conversation, and what we talk about all the time is we are a boutique theater.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our executive producer doesn't like hearing this, but, this would probably be why she would leave
mm-hmm.
us, our company, because it's like, look, we're not going to do Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
we're not going to do the Christmas Carol. We're not going to fill a 700-seat house. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do the Nutcracker. We're not doing that. Mm-hmm. We never have, and we never will. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, we stumble into hit shows. Can't even tell you what they are. It's always just like, oh, that's crazy how popular that was. It's a very peculiar timing, you know, perfect storm creates an actual real hit show. Mm. And that perfect storm is harder and harder to formalize and plan for. Mm-hmm. Because we certainly never, and I mean never, do shoddy work. Mm-hmm. It could be that we do a show that's like, wow, that was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. But we never do shoddy work, so you could never fault us for like, wasn't that good?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I didn't like it. It's a very strange show, mm-hmm. but it's never shoddy.
Do you guys have the capability of extending a run, or?
No.
You just do what you do and that's
it? We bring them back.
Okay.
We have our own theater.
Yeah.
But you know what? It costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, executive producer, that's one of our big, huge conversations endlessly. Well, it costs this much for you to put, you know, your little show in there for just a cool weekend party. It's like, mm-hmm. if we don't, then we won't.
Mm-hmm. When you bring shows back, do you find that they lose something or do they gain something?
Oh, they gain.
Or they definitely gain?
They gain. Yeah, we have done a lot of that. And, you know, it's steeped. You bring it back, it's a little bit richer. Mm-hmm. The broth is a bit more distilled. We have much more understanding of what we're saying. We're subtler. Mm-hmm. Repetition is the key to anything being good. So the more times you repeat it, the better it is, just technically. So, you know, it's only good to repeat work.
Yeah.
Is
there anything specific that you'd like to bring back in the future, or?
Well, I just finished a show called Nightingale Alley. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a show with other artists. This show that I forwarded, and we do this a lot too. We have a stable of artists we've worked with a lot, and this was a lot of longtime Rabbit collaborators. And I have to pee so bad that I'm gonna. I'll go do that, and I'll tell you about Nightingale Alley.
Okay, sounds good.
Why don't you pause those?
Okay.